Monday to Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. on FMR.
Well, in an editorial today, Business Day reckons we're in the season of policy adventurism as the electioneering ahead of next year has kicked off in earnest. I would say we haven't even scratched the surface of the debate required to start to reverse years of economic decline and stagnation under successive ANC administrations that have pursued economic policies that really seek to place the state at the centre of almost everything and continues to do so. Everyone just looks at the dogged persistence of a national health insurance, for example. Well, last week, the Centre for Development and Enterprise released a paper to add to the debate, which in effect calls the ANC government's policies anti-growth. Well, I'm joined now by Executive Director of the CDE, Anne Bernstein. Good evening, Anne.
Good evening, Michael. Good to be with you and your audience.
Now, your recent report on what you called our anti-growth policies and bad government policies has raised, I think, many important issues. But let's just start with the central argument, which suggests that slow economic growth in the country is primarily the result of bad policy choices and a decline in governance. Could you just elaborate on the specific policy choices and governance failures that have contributed to this decline?
Michael, I think it's important to appreciate, as you do, but most South Africans must appreciate there's nothing inevitable about South Africa's economic decline. We're a very special developing country with enormous potential. So in a sense, you have to work very hard to get to the kind of polycrisis we have on every front. Now, a lot of people say, oh, we've got good policies, but they're badly implemented. I've always thought this was wrong. Let me give you some examples of some bad policies. Let's just take two. The one is, because we chose to have a developmental state, which meant you perpetuate Eskom as a monopoly provider of energy, when that goes wrong, it's not just the institution that is in deep trouble, but the future of our economy and our society is now at risk. So having a monopoly has certainly over the last decade has been contrary to what many other developing countries have done, where they've had a power crisis and they have gone for many market providers, sometimes in competition with state providers as well, but you get much greater supply and abundance and you get price reduction. What we've had is a failing monopoly and a rise in price. And less energy, an appalling combination. So going for monopolies in the public sector for absolutely vital public goods like railways, ports, Transnet and Eskom are the two best examples, is the wrong approach. And as they fail around us and the cost of their limited services go up, we need to rethink policy. Another example of bad policy or the wrong policy seems to us to be localization, where the government is determined to force both government agencies and as much as they can private players to buy local. Now, nobody wants to buy anywhere else unless there's a good reason. And often it's because the goods are cheaper or they're better quality. Well, they're better suited to what you need. Now, by trying to force everyone to go local, you increase the cost of doing business in South Africa. You make us less competitive because of that. And in some cases, for example, Transnet, we don't make locomotives. So to tell them they have to buy them in South Africa, then you've got to apply for a exemption, which takes months and months and months from an inefficient government department, is just contrary to everything we need to get faster growth.
And it reminds me of what Portia Derby, in fact, the CEO of Transnet, said last year, lamenting the fact that for particular spare parts, she had to approach Minister Ibrahim Patel, the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competitions Department, for an exemption, which she got 9 months later. In an economy that is losing out on record high coal prices, which they were last year, it just seems to be a spectacularly ill thought through own goal. I want to pick up on the localization question, though, because it was interesting chatting to Steve Nichols of the Presidential Climate Commission the other day. And he seems to think that, you know, in the thinking from a policy perspective around the just energy transition, that we do need some degree of localization. But he sees the debate as a distinguished point here between compulsory localization, such as the DTIC would have it, or incentivized localization, a la the US Inflation Reduction Act. I'm not so sure I'm a fan of either, to be honest with you, when you're interfering in markets. But if we were to have a policy that sought to introduce localization, would you support something that is more akin to what President Biden in the US is doing under the IRA?
The debate about the effect of the IRA and its impact and whether it's a good or bad strategy is, I think, only beginning. We have an incentivized approach to localization in South Africa, which is the automotive industry. And here, very distinguished professors of economics are saying it's time to do a cost-benefit analysis. How much does it cost South Africa to subsidize? And what are the benefits that we're getting? We're certainly not getting the job creation benefits that we were promised, but there could be others. So I think there is a place for incentives. But the key issue is the framework within which you think about this. For a country like South Africa, we can only grow in a serious way if we're export-oriented. And that requires us to think about the entire environment in which companies operate and how to make that as efficient as possible to compete in a very difficult global economy. And then you might say, well, we'll incentivize this or that, assuming you have a competent state to do that. But in general, I think we've got to be looking at how we compete with other countries and how we produce things in South Africa in a much more conducive environment than we have. And you can't do it when you can't get your goods to market or government introduces a new law that interferes with how you should run your company or tells you what to buy. It's a whole lot of things that just add up and up and up, which is part of our argument, which is at no stage has South Africa said we are really going to prioritize growth. We've got lots of speeches saying we want growth. We've got lots of documents saying we want growth. But we haven't sat down as a country and said, these are the things we have to do to get growth, and we will do nothing to contradict this. That requires determination and a vision, which we've never had.
I was speaking to Hendrik de Toy, the CEO of 91, about an example of a country getting this particular area of policymaking right, developing a vision and then rallying the entire country around it. And granted, Saudi Arabia was his example, is quite different to South Africa and probably far more homogenous. But what MBS has done, let's put the human rights discussion to one side, is rally the country around a vision, his Vision 2030. And we're seeing major investment on the back of this. The president, Cyril Ramaphosa, came into power on the back of this reform ticket, and he promised reforms in energy, and he'll probably point to the lifting of the 100 megawatt cap on self-generation and private power, and he'll point to third-party access in the rail sector, and he'll point to some very slow progress elsewhere in telecoms. I can't even tell you what it is because it hasn't happened yet. And he'll say, no, we are reforming. These are the right policy choices. How would you respond?
In two ways. The first is that President Ramaphosa has a list of reforms, a laundry list, and they're making very, very slow progress through those. Some are positive, a lot are positives, some are not. I disagree with how they're dealing with the issue of skilled migration. But, you know, Michael, I interviewed Michael Spence last week, Nobel Prize winner, former head of the Stanford Business School, and chairman of the Global Commission on Growth and Development of a few years ago, looking at developing countries that have achieved high growth over a long period, 20 to 25 years. And one of the things he said was a laundry list of reforms is not a growth strategy. What you need is what you've been saying. You need a vision of where you want your country and your economy to go. You need a team of people absolutely committed to making this happen and making it the top priority for the country's government. And then you need effective people to implement. You need a program. You need deadlines. You need to account to the country. You need great messaging. You've got to dominate the narrative of we are making progress. These choices are the right ones, even if they're hard. We've had nothing like that from this president.
I think that pretty much sums it up. Thank you, Anne, for shedding light on these critical issues facing South Africa's economy and for the excellent work that the Center for Development and Enterprise, a non-profit think tank, does in shaping this important debate that we really need to have, the deep-down, difficult debate, if we are to bring the country back from the precipice. As Bobby Godsell used to love saying, we have done it before, we look over the edge and we pull ourselves back. This time, I think he's going to require considerable effort to take care.